Well, this morning, we're going to continue making our way through this series. We've been reading the book, We Make the Road by Walking, by Brian McLaren. And today's message is going to be focused on the 25th chapter of the book called Jesus, Mind, Power, and Violence. And for those who weren't here last week, and for those who were here last week, I just want to kind of go back to last week, because I think what Sue talked about in her message last week also spills over into this week's message. Last week, Sue talked to us about our circle of friends. And she talked about Jesus' circle of friends, and how his circle of friends was so unlike him. He had people from every socioeconomic bracket, people who were cast out and socially rejected, people of different races, ethnicities, religions. He had such a different group of friends that surrounded. And Sue challenged us to look inside our circle of friends and say, are we filling our own circles with people who look like us and think like us and act like us? Or do we have the courage to go outside of that circle of friends and embrace those who are different from us, who think differently, so that we can learn understanding and that we can grow from each other in our circles? That was last week. Now this week, Jesus is going to take us on a field trip. He took his disciples on a field trip to make a point. He took his 12 closest friends on a 25-mile trek from Galilee to Caesarea Philippi. This is a regional center of the Roman Empire, and if you're in the Gospel of Matthew, you can find the story in Matthew chapter 16, verse 13, through chapter 17, verse 9. Now, you can see from these two images, the one in the upper corner, the top picture, this is what an ancient sort of reproduction, what this city would have looked like in Jesus' day. And you can see down here in the lower corner, this is what it looks like now. And you can see that what the people did in this town is they literally carved the buildings into this rock face, this face of this cliff. And the city was originally built as a worship center to the god Baal. And he was the god of the Canaanites. And later, when the Greeks came in and they conquered this territory, they renamed this city Panias after the Greek god Pan. And so worshippers would carve these elaborate statues for worship into that cliff face. And in this time, before the Romans came in, it was known as Panias. Then when the Romans came in and defeated the area, Herod the Great was the ruler under the Roman Empire. But when Herod the Great died, his son, Philip, took over rule of this area. And he renamed Panias Caesarea Philippi, his own little kingdom named after himself, Philip's kingdom. So it is at the foot of this temple, this city renamed for the ruler, Philip, that Jesus brings his disciples and he asks them this question. Who do people say the Son of Man is? Who do people say the Son of Man is? Now, standing at the foot of this temple for Jesus and his disciples, standing at the foot of this temple is like a Jewish leader bringing his followers to Auschwitz, or a Japanese leader bringing his followers to Hiroshima, or a Native American leader bringing his people to Wounded Knee and asking, who do you say that I am? So who is this Jesus? Who is he? Well, Peter is quick. He knows. He's got this. And he says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Those words sound familiar, don't they? If you walk into any church on any corner, you're going to hear those words, Jesus Christ, Son of the Living God. You see them on billboards, on bumper stickers. I mean, this is a familiar phrase. So who do you think Jesus is? What does that mean? Who is Jesus? The Son of God. Who is Jesus? The Savior.
Redeemer.
Redeemer.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Teacher, God with us.
Friend.
So standing at the foot of Caesarea Philippi with his 12 disciples, Peter's words had a very different ring than they do to our modern ears. Peter was making the claim that Jesus was the Christ, and in Peter's day, that had a very specific meaning. Because the Jewish community thought that there would be a Messiah, who would be an anointed one, who would come in as a military ruler and would defeat the people who were oppressing the Jewish people and lead them and liberate them, and they would have freedom. They thought that the Messiah would be a military leader who would use violence to bring in and usher in a new kingdom. He would become a son of God. And son of God has a very different ring in Jesus' time than it did in ours as well. Son of God was a title that the Caesars gave themselves. They would call themselves Caesar in order to give themselves authority to rule on earth. But this is not the kind of Son of God that Jesus would be. Jesus first applauds Peter for this realization that he is the Messiah, the Son of God. And he affirms his leadership. Jesus affirms Peter's leadership because it is on Peter's leadership that the church would be built and the community of disciples would grow. But then Jesus goes one step further. And I imagine him standing below a statue of a Greek god, and he tells his followers what kind of king he will be. He will not be a king that will rule with power and overthrow the rulers of his day with violence. He will be crucified. He will suffer the death of traitors and criminals, and he will be raised on the third day. So can you imagine yourself in Peter's shoes? How completely confused he would be. This isn't how the Messiah would come. This isn't how he imagined Jesus would bring justice to his own people. Jesus being killed, that's crazy talk. That's unspeakable. And so he cries out, God forbid it. Of course, God forbid it. Who wants to see their beloved teacher suffer and die? But Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. Are you as confused as Peter? Who is this Jesus? In Los Angeles County, California, in 1994, remember back to 1994. Racial tensions were high. In 1992, the Los Angeles riots and the verdict from the Rodney King case triggered uprisings throughout Southern California. In the city of Long Beach, California, segregation was real and gang violence was a daily occurrence. For the teenagers of Woodrow Wilson High School, they felt disempowered and hopeless. They lived facing daily abuse and violence. They struggled with poverty and homelessness. A gang was their only sense of identity and belonging. For one teenager, he couldn't even imagine living to the age of 18. So for her first teaching assignment, Erin Gruel taught English to the most at-risk freshmen at Woodrow Wilson High School in Long Beach, California. She writes, "When one of my students exclaimed, 'I feel like I live in an undeclared war zone,' I realized that these young people needed to be encouraged to pick up a pen rather than a gun. Tragically, this student has lost 24 friends to gang violence. In an attempt to connect with my class, I gave my students journals with the hope of giving them a voice. And before long, they began to pour out their stories openly, unburdened by the anxieties of grammar and by grammar and grades. Journals provided a safe place to become passionate writers, communicating their own histories and their own insights. As they started to write down their thoughts and feelings, motivation blossomed. Suddenly, they had found a forum for self-expression and a place where they felt valued and validated for the first time. Eventually, their journal entries were collected and published as the Freedom Writer's Journal, or the Freedom Writer's Diary." So Mrs. G, as she was affectionately known to her students, instead of telling these teenagers who they were and what they were going to do and how they would learn, she listened. She listened to them. She listened to their stories. She listened to their daily struggles. And as she listened, they were transformed. And they began for the first time in their lives to discover their own identity. Now, they still struggled under the constant threat of violence each and every day. But then, one day, in their classroom, this happened. What is this?
Just leave it alone.
You think this is funny? Theo, would this be funny if it were a picture of you?
You think?
Close the workbooks. Maybe we should talk about art. Tito's got real talent, don't you think? I saw a picture just like this once, in a museum. Only it wasn't a black man, it was a Jewish man. And instead of big lips, he had a really big nose, like a rat's nose. But he wasn't just one particular Jewish man, this was a drawing of all Jews. And these drawings were put in the newspapers by the most famous gang in history. You think you know all about gangs? You're amateurs. This gang would put you all to shame. And they started out poor and angry, and everybody looked down on them until one man decided to give them some pride and identity and somebody to blame. Take over neighborhoods? That's nothing compared to them. They took over countries. You want to know how? They just wiped out everybody else. Yeah, they wiped out everybody they didn't like, and everybody they blamed for their life being hard. And one of the ways they did it was by doing this. See, they'd print pictures like this in the newspapers. Jewish people with big, long noses, blacks with big, fat lips. It also published scientific evidence that proved Jews and blacks were the lowest form of human species. Jews and blacks were more like animals. And because they were just like animals, it didn't really matter whether they lived or died. In fact, life would be a whole lot better if they were all dead. That's how a Holocaust happens.
In the late 1920s, the National Socialist Party was formed by young men who were feeling powerless. They were broke, unemployed, and starving. And suddenly, a young man rose to power and influence within the party, and he gave the other young men an identity. He gave them someone to blame, and he rose to power. They used power and violence to take out their enemies, and they systematically murdered millions of people. They played on racist stereotypes, and this is how a Holocaust begins. By manipulating people's deepest fears, fueling the flames of those fears by naming an enemy, and using violence to feel powerful. Violence does not overcome violence, and hate does not overcome hate. Jesus teaches us a different way. He teaches us that it is love and compassion that can transform violence and hate in this world. But to someone who is living under the threats of daily violence and oppression and racism and injustice, it is almost impossible to imagine how love and compassion can overcome this violence. I think this is why Peter had such a hard time understanding Jesus. There was this tradition that said that the Messiah would come and defeat their oppressors to end this unjust rule. But Jesus says, no, that is not the way. He says that it is when everything is turned upside down. That's what changes everything. He tells us that it is compassion that makes a difference in the world. So let's read this scripture from the Gospel of Luke. Let's read this together. I tell you, love your enemies. Help and give without expecting a return. You'll never, I promise, regret it. Live out this God-created identity the way our Father lives toward us. Generously and graciously, even when we're at our worst, our Father is kind, you be kind. In this translation of the Greek scriptures, the Greek word oikeuromanes is a hard one to say. That word is translated from a Hebrew word, and it means much more than kind or kindness. It literally means compassion. It's interesting because in the Hebrew, the singular form of that word literally means womb. It says that Jesus is calling the people to embody compassion as their way of life because this is what defines the very essence of God. We have come from God. We are created in love. In his book, Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time, Marcus Poor talks about the literal meaning of compassion. It comes from Latin, the word passion, which means to feel, and cum, which means with. So it literally means to feel with. So Jesus' statement is to be compassionate as God is compassionate, is to say that God is a mother who gives birth to us, and that God feels a love for us that is so deep and unconditional, like a motherly love. And Jesus calls us to imitate this kind of love in all of our relationships. It extends beyond our families. It extends beyond our circle of friends. It calls us to a brotherly and sisterly love for all of community, for those who are unlike us. It calls us to live and love those who are not in our circle, those who are most unlovable including our own enemies. Is there someone that you would identify in your life who is your enemy? Someone in your life that you are struggling to be in a relationship with? And is it possible for you to imagine compassion for that person? That's hard. That's hard. Mrs. G continued to encourage her students to write in their journals so that they could gain compassion for each other. She taught them about the Holocaust, and she encouraged them to read the diary of Anne Frank. She took her students on a field trip to the Simon Wiesenthal Center to learn about tolerance and to learn about the Holocaust. And then, while they were there, they were given a card with a new identity, and they followed the identity of a child through the museum, and at the end of the day, they discovered whether or not they lived or they died. After that experience, they went and they had a banquet in a fancy hotel. Kids had never seen a place like this. And they sat at tables with Holocaust survivors and they heard their stories. They were transformed by this experience because even in their classroom, they were divided by race and by gang. The Cambodians sat in one corner, the Hispanics in another corner, the blacks in another corner, and the one white student in the room wouldn't move. There were so many walls that they built up between them. But suddenly through this experience, they were transformed. They had learned compassion, and it changed their lives. But it was one person's story in particular who changed their minds and helped encourage them to see a different way. Meet Gies was Otto Frank's secretary. Otto Frank was the father of Anne Frank. And when the Holocaust began, Meet Gies was one of several people who hid the Frank family and kept them safe for many years. So she came and spoke to Mrs. G's classroom. Here's a clip from the film, The Freedom Writer's Diary.
The bounty on a Jew was about $2. Someone desperate for money told the Gestapo. On August 4th, they stormed into my office. And a man pointed a gun at me and said, "Not a sound. Not one word." And then they went straight upstairs to the attic. I felt so helpless. I could hear Anne screaming, objects being thrown around. So I ran back to my house. I looked for an earring or knickknacks, you know, anything I could take back with me to bribe them. So I took this back with me, all these things, and the soldier there took out his gun and put it against my head. You could be shot for hiding a Jew or go to camp. So another soldier recognized my accent. He was Austrian, and so was I. But I had been adopted by a Dutch family. So he told the soldier with the gun to let me go. There isn't a day that I don't remember August 4th. And I think about Anne Frank. Yes?
I've never had a hero before. But you are my hero.
Oh, no. No, no, young man, no. I am not a hero. No. I did what I had to do because it was the right thing to do. That is all. You know, we are all ordinary people.
But even an ordinary secretary or a housewife or a teenager can, within their own small ways, turn on a small light in a dark room. Yeah? I have read your letters, and your teacher has been telling me many things about your experiences. You are the heroes. You are heroes every day. Your faces are engraved in my heart.
Even an ordinary secretary or a housewife or a teenager can, within their own small ways, turn on a small light in a dark room. So who do you think Jesus is? Who is Jesus? He's the one showing compassion. Who is Jesus? He is the way. And we follow him. We follow his way of the world. Jesus turned the social and political world of his day upside down. His rule would be a rule centered in love, brotherly love, for all people. And instead of using violence to defeat the unjust, in God's name, he suffered at the hands of the powerful in order to overcome violence. So we may be like Peter. We may still be trying to figure out, who is this Jesus? Who is he? We might still be trying to figure this out, searching for him, seeking for him, trying to understand what he's calling us to. And we might not always get it, just like Peter. But we're invited onto this journey. The world is our classroom. We're learning on our journey. And Jesus is our teacher, teaching us the way of compassion in the world. So as you leave this place, wherever you may go, with whoever you may be that small light. Show compassion, because this is the way of Jesus.